this isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
Really planned on today coming in here to tell you I just bought a car. Didn't work out though. This is Driveline Show. So what am I talking about? Today was this month's end of the auction at JJ Kane out there in Riverside, and I had found on it a 1996 Chevy Caprice Classic 9C1, you know, the police package. Because when I tell people all the time that I have an old LAPD Detective Impala, they imagine the B-body from the 90s, when in reality I have the mid-size front-wheel drive version from the 2000s, which I like, but no one else seems to. So, been meaning to buy a B-body forever. They're really hard to find. So one turned up at JJ Kane this month. It was a non-runner, but very rare to find. One owner, police package Caprice. I think from what I can tell, it was owned by the city of Pasadena. Non-runner. Looks like it hasn't been used in about 10 years. Every single tire on it is ripped to shreds. It's dirty inside and out. Low coolant lights on. It looks like it's been parked for 11 years. The Carfax on it has no history after 2015. So, non-runners like this at JJ Kane usually bring $300 to $400. And I figured a car, dealer only, 35 years old, or not 35 quite yet, 30 years old, getting ahead of myself. Anyway, 30-year-old car, no one's going to be that interested in buying it. I could probably swoop this thing up for cheap and save it. So I've been watching the auction for the past week, and I was winning for most of the week. I had a couple other bidders. I was winning around $600 for days. And then finally today, I got outbid, and the next bid was $1,000. And I was like, man, I really don't want to go to $1,000 on this, but I think I will. Outbid again to $1,100. I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to wait until 2:45 when it's at the very end. And I'll swipe in. I'll go up to $1,200 on this. So I'm watching and I'm all ready to get off the freeway and pull over. And I glance down at my phone. And all of a sudden it shoots up. $1,600. $2,000. $2,500. I'm like, okay, I'm out. I'm not even buying this. Finally ends 2 minutes later. $3,500. So like, I'm not even mad. Like, if I had lost by one bid, which happens a lot, it's infuriating. But to lose by $2,500, I'm like, okay, whatever. Someone wanted this a lot more than me, but I still want one. And from what I can tell right now, there's none for sale in all of North America. So if you have a Caprice 9C1 to sell me or any car you want to sell me, 833-3DL-SHOW, leave a voicemail. Or leave a voicemail with your comments or questions. I also saw a 27,000-mile Crown Vic sell for over $13,000 with fees. So, big month for car sales. No deals to be had. So, as I said before, this is Driveline. And here at Driveline, we appreciate artists. We don't use AI. The intro was made by my friend Dan. The music you heard was made by This guy I knew, Alex, who made all the music for my YouTube channel about 12 years ago. Real people, no AI. But sometimes AI forces its way into our lives, and that's what happened when I was doing research for another car I wanted to buy. I like Corvairs, and Jerry Seinfeld also likes Corvairs. As many of you know, I have one of Jerry's other cars, his police beetle. This one was never owned by him, though. I saw it. It was from the Unfrosted movie. It was the Corvair Lakewood wagon. And both it and its backup car were on Cinema Vehicle's website. And I was like, I need to find more about these. I'm going to research them. So I simply put into Google, Seinfeld Corvair. Because what other results can you get for that? Well, Google's AI overview concocted this. The Seinfeld episode The Dealership features a Corvair as part of a car dealership subplot. The episode follows Jerry's attempts to get a good deal on a car, with the Corvair being one of the vehicles he considers. The show is known for its quirky and often absurd situations, and the Corvair is used as part of a comedic storyline in the episode. He goes on to elaborate. In the episode, Jerry is trying to leverage his friendship with David Putty to get a better deal on a new car. Which is true. The dealership has a variety of vehicles, including the Corvair, which Jerry initially considers. This is when it starts to get weird. The Corvair is a classic American car from the 1960s, known for its unique design and sometimes controversial safety features. According to Haggerty, and there's a link here. I can't click on it because this is a screenshot. I really wish I did. According to Haggerty, the Corvair's appearance in Seinfeld was a way to use a vehicle that has a distinct history to make the show's car dealership storyline more interesting. The car's presence in the episode is a running gag as Jerry and the other characters interact with it during their dealership adventure. So, I couldn't help but imagine what this would look like.
I love the Corvair.
Good news, we got a 900 in black. That's the hot color. High five.
Kramer's out there with the salesman trying to see if it really is unsafe at any speed. Jerry professing his love of the Corvair, courtesy of Spike's Car Radio. So, I did never find out the whereabouts of that Lakewood car, but good for AI for providing a little bit of whimsy in our lives. And on the topic, I am just being inundated with ads for unsigned musicians. I don't know if this is a new thing across all of social media, but this is a lot of what I'm hearing.
Hi, sorry to interrupt your scroll. I'm here because you are highly likely to enjoy weird music, physical media, old video games, stuff like that, and I just gotta tell you something. I'm Jesse, aka Basic Printer, and I make kooky electropop tunes.
Hey! This video is for anybody who's ever felt like they don't quite fit in, or they're not skinny enough, or they're on espresso number 3 and it's only 10 a.m.
Hello, if you're seeing this, it means you're one of the very small percentage of people who will listen to an independent artist that you've never heard of before, and the algorithm knows that you're the kind of person who will listen to new music.
I mean, there's about a dozen of these going through a rotation, and I swear that they all went to the same school of internet marketing. They all start with, if you're seeing this, they always point out how they don't have a fancy manager or record label, and they all want to send you a free CD.
This is my most popular album called Ha Ha Yeah. Weird title, weird album cover, weird sound for a weirdo like you.
That's so presumptuous. I mean, when I hear this sales proposition, this is all I think of.
Hello, sir. Yes. You look like a man who needs help satisfying his wife, so...
Oh! Like, do you like badminton, armadillos, and Pez dispensers? Well,
my music was never meant for the mainstream, which is why I've never had a manager, never had a booking agent, and never had a label.
Can music actually change your life? The answer is yes. That's the good news. You know what's even better news? I want to send you a free CD. I want to send you a free CD. Yes, you heard that right. All I ask is that you cover the cost of shipping.
Hey, can we send you a CD of our weird concept album for basically free? We'd like to send you a copy of our CD, The Carrot. All we ask is that you cover the teeny tiny ant penis fee that it takes to pay the American hero, who is the postal worker, to get it right to your door.
I mean, this is the gentrified version of mixtape guys. The people who stand outside of Walmart and they try and give you their free CD, but then you have to give them a forced donation. But in light of all this, they got me. And this was the ad that got me.
This is the Phantom, baby! If you're seeing this, it's because you like rock and roll, horror movies, and vinyl records. And you might like my new album.
The Phantom AD plays ghoulish rock and roll, which is available on green vinyl. Oh, yeah.
So why am I doing this? I'm a substitute teacher by day and an independent artist by night. That means I don't have a slick manager or a big recording label backing me. But what I do have is people like you. By offering my album online, I've been able to connect with tons of rad people, book my own tours, and truthfully, it's been a dream come true. So basically, I'm just a guy doing a thing.
More like a ghoul thing.
So if this seems cool to you, I would be honored to have your support. Click below, pick up my album, and I'll mail it to you myself. It includes color vinyl, digital downloads, demo tracks, and I'll even throw in a sticker and a pin.
Together, we will go where the party takes us.
I go where the party takes me. Dracula's castle, Frankenstein.
I genuinely really, really liked this music, and I bought the album. So, support your independent artists. That's the lesson in all this, but specifically the Phantom AD, because these songs are just killing it. I mean, come on.
Just one thing, I gotta know, what you got hiding behind that door?
I mean, if you grew up watching Golden Age of Svengoolie, this is that same energy.
Give me LSD and then see what I do. Give me LSD and then see what I do. Psychoactive mind control for you. Yeah, MK Ultra Rock. MK Ultra Roll. Give me LSD. Cobalt brainwash mind control.
I mean, this guy's even doing Britney Spears. Check this out. I mean, this is Vanilla Fudge doing You Keep Me Hanging On level greatness. I mean, I love 60s music. I love the resurgence of, like, the Cramps and stuff. I like the horror aesthetic. I go out and buy this album. I mean, I haven't found a track on it that I do not like. And the Phantom, come by and see us here on Driveline.
Hey, man, this is Eric. I love the show. It was so much fun to listen to it. It was like we're in one of your cars just driving around and having a conversation. Listened to it while I was driving around in the F-150 with the recently replaced transmission. By the way, you fucked Ford transmissions. But yeah, love the show. Can't wait for the next episode.
8333DL show with your messages. Yeah, poor Eric just put, like, I think $18,000 in his 6-year-old Ford truck. Do not recommend. So, in the same vein with my cars, I'm still asked a lot. It's been about 6 months, but people are like, yo, what happened with all your smashed cars? All your cars got smashed. Oh, Justin, did you hear? All his cars got smashed. All my cars got smashed in the same way that Magnus sold all his cars. It wasn't all of my cars. But the car that was closest to me and the most important one in my collection did unfortunately get totaled. It was my black 2011 Silverado. Bought it right after I got my first job in radio. Once I had a real paycheck, I'm going to buy my own car with my own money. And if I had to keep one car and sell the rest, it was always going to be the 2011 Silverado. So I unfortunately lost that one. And that's it still hurts, as you can hear. But it was also my tow vehicle, and it was like a secondary daily driver. So I had to replace it. Plus, I was looking for any excuse to trade in my Volt, so it all worked out in that sense. But I haven't bought a car like a normal person in maybe 7 years. And man, has it gotten irritating. So, before I wound up, I ultimately wound up going with a 2017 GMC Sierra. It was close to what I had. Same engine as my old truck. Same active fuel management issues. Same 6-speed transmission. Predictable. But it had Apple CarPlay, it had heated and cooled seats, and it had Bose sound. Great daily driver. But before I arrived on that, I was trying to go a little older. I was trying to stay within the budget that the insurance company gave me a payout on. But unfortunately, the money for a 2011 truck buys you a 2011 truck, and most people don't take care of their trucks like I did. So, a lot of garbage out there, but I wanted something a little nicer in that same age range, something that could tow but still be comfortable. I was looking at Avalanches. And the Avalanches, I honestly never liked them, but the more practical I get, the more they made sense. Short little bed, but the mid-gate folded down and you could fit longer things in there. It was still a full-size truck. It was based on the Suburban chassis, so it rode a little bit better than my pickup would have. All right. These are starting to get cool now that they've been discontinued for 10 years. So I was perusing, and a bunch of the results were on Carvana. And I had luck with Carvana before. I bought my Volt from them. Super easy. I don't have to talk to people. It's perfect. So I'm just browsing Carvana. I'm not logged in, by the way. And a few minutes after I look at these Avalanches, I get an email, which reads, "Hi, Justin. Thanks so much for shopping with Carvana. I noticed you've been checking out both the 2012 Chevrolet Avalanche and the 2011 Avalanche in red. Both are smart picks if you want a blend of truck utility and SUV comfort, especially with those flexible mid-gate designs and roomy interiors." So, this is not written by a person. AI at it again. "Since you've got experience with a plug-in hybrid..." Clearly, they're referencing the Volt I bought. "And seem interested in versatility, I thought you might appreciate a couple of newer SUVs that are more fuel-efficient, tech-forward, and could fit your lifestyle." So they recommend. "The 2024 Ford Escape offers modern driver safety tech, like blind spot monitoring and lane keeping, wireless Apple CarPlay, and much better gas mileage. 28 mpg combined versus the 17 mpg on the Avalanche. It's also priced thousands less than the Avalanches you viewed, while still seating 5 and offering everyday cargo space." How is this even a comparison? And what do they care if I buy a cheaper car? Wouldn't they want to sell me the junky old Avalanches that probably no one else wants because they only get 17 mpg? If you'd like to stick with Chevy, which I do, the 2024 Chevrolet Trailblazer is a fun-to-drive compact SUV. No, it's not! With automatic emergency braking, remote start, and a user-friendly touchscreen system. It's even easier to park and gets up to 30 mpg highway, unlike the Avalanches, which are much less efficient and harder to maneuver in tight spots. Is this like bait and switch or something? Like, why can't I buy the damn Avalanche? If you want to compare features side by side, have questions about financing, or just want a sounding board, feel free to use our chat, because you can't speak to a real person. I'll check in again in a few days to see how your search is going. Happy shopping, Emily." Emily proceeded to email me every day until I ultimately bought the next car. Car shopping's annoying. Something that happened this week with my car ventures, my second oldest car, which didn't get smashed, my 1998 BMW 328 convertible. It was due for smog. Now, I've had this car registered in California almost 10 years. And aside from when I first moved here and I had to get new cats for it, I've never had a problem passing smog with this. And I've gone to the same guy for my smog all the years I lived here. But suddenly he's opening the hood and he's like, "Was this here last time I tested?" And he's pointing at the cold air intake, which was on the car when I bought it. Never liked the can in any way, and I was always looking for an excuse to get rid of it. But now I'm getting marked as tampering. I also failed the initial test. So, he's convinced if I put everything back to stock, which I wanted to do anyway, I'll pass. That's like strike three, I'm out, because my last two prior smog checks too also failed. One to the sum of $1,300 for a new catalytic converter. And my old Rolls Royce, no one even wants to smog that thing. Like, I haven't registered it because you take it to a smog shop and no one even wants to look at it because it's old and it's British and it's got SU carburetors. Like, I don't know what to do. So thankfully, hitting the news in the last couple months, Leno's Law is back. And it looks more likely to pass this time. So, last year, there was a bill that was supposed to reform smog laws in California. And it got Jay Leno's backing, and then finally some media attention. And of course, it didn't pass. But now it's back again and more likely to pass. The classic car community, this is from Car and Driver, the classic car community has another chance at passing the emissions exemption bill, proudly labeled as Leno's Law. Introduced to the California legislature on February 20th, 2026, California's Senate Bill 1392 brings back Leno's Law after the original version, Senate Bill 712, failed to pass into law last year. The new bill is co-sponsored by Senators Shannon Grove and Dave Cortez. As before, Bill 1392 aims to carve out emissions testing exemptions for classic vehicles on a rolling basis, starting with 1981 model year vehicles. So I really only have one car that this affects so far, the Rolls Royce, which will be good. While the last bill required cars to be registered as collector motor vehicles to get the exemption, the new bill adds another provision. In an attempt to sway legislators, the new bill requires that in addition to collector status, classic cars would not be used as the owner's primary mode of transportation. I just assumed that was a given. Senate Bill 1392, Leno's Law, is a collaborative effort between Senator Cortez, Senator Grove, Jay Leno, and a growing list of legislators in strong support, and SEMA. It's been refined from last year's Senate Bill 712 to maximize benefits to car enthusiasts while also ensuring the bill's ultimate success. Because of this, we are confident that the bill will pass, a spokesperson for Senator Cortez said in a statement to her sister publication, Road and Track. So, I'm still not holding my breath. I don't see this passing. I really don't. But the problems go a lot deeper than just reforming smog requirements, because the whole DMV in this state is screwed up. This just out April 8th from ABC 7. SoCal man turns to 7 on your side after getting $1,300 bill for dormant DMV fees and penalties. A local man is facing a costly bureaucratic problem after selling his truck to a friend 14 years ago. He recently bought the truck back from him, but when he tried to register it, the Department of Motor Vehicles said he owed more than $1,300 in back fees and penalties.
Robert Gettinger, a truck he sold 14 years ago, has come back to haunt him and his wallet.
Back in 2012, I went to DMV to sell this truck to somebody I know, and we went through the transaction of filing the paperwork. I'm not sure if he was supposed to finish it or I was supposed to finish it, but somewhere in the mix, something didn't get done.
Gettinger says the new owner wasn't even using the truck. He kept it in Malibu, and after fires, COVID, and life getting in the way, the truck sat untouched for years. It was always covered, so the paint is still okay, and amazingly, it still has a 2012 DMV sticker in pristine condition. Fast forward more than a decade, and in a twist, he ended up buying the same truck back.
So then 14 years went by, and then I said, hey, what about that truck? I said, did you ever do anything with it? No. I said, do you want to sell it back to me? And I said, sure.
But when he went to register the truck again, the DMV told him he owed more than $1,300 in back fees and penalties.
And went to DMV, took the paperwork down there, and I'm told all of a sudden, you need $1,369 to register this. I said, $1,369? I said, the truck's not even worth that money.
No one even talks about this ever. Like, I talk to people who have never lived outside of this state. It is not normal to have to pay back registration fees on, one, a car you're not driving, and two, a car that you didn't even previously own. Like, when I moved here, I was just astounded that your car could owe the state money, and then you buy a car that owes the state money, and you're responsible for it. Like, we need to look and get some real reform on this, because no one else is doing this. In Illinois, if I don't register a car, they're just like, cool, just don't drive it. You want to come back in 5 years? Here's a new sticker. And something else that's exploitational. This past week, I went and got a massage. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. No. I went and got a massage, not from my normal person. Shout out Cindy and Toluca Lake. I went to a place up in Northridge, and it was a Thai massage parlor. First time ever getting one of these. So, after getting my ass kicked for 90 minutes, I go out. The bill was already paid beforehand, so I'm going to give him a little cash tip. And it was like a $90 massage. I'm thinking $15 tip, that's good. That's about 20%, give or take. So I hand over the cash tip, and I'm like, thank you very much. And then she just looks like in shock at the 10 and 5 in her hand. She's like, did you not enjoy the massage? I'm like, no, it was great. She's like, oh, well, for 90 minutes, the tip is $30. It's like, the tip is $30? It's like, yeah. And then she refers to this sign, and it shows on it, $20 tip for 60 minutes, $30 tip for 90. And she's asking me for more money. And I'm like, oh, no, that's all the cash I have. She's like, oh, we could do it on a card. And I'm like, no. So I ran out of there. Last time I checked, it's not a tip if you're forced to pay it. Just make the prices higher. And all this comes along with an article that came out this week. This is published by KTLA. America's tipping culture has finally reached a breaking point, survey finds. Shocker. The era of Americans tipping automatically for, well, almost everything has finally reached a tipping point.
Not funny!
According to a new study from PopMenu released Wednesday, nearly 80% of consumers now describe modern tipping practices as ridiculous, and 44% say they are tipping less than last year. That shift is already being felt by hospitality workers and others who rely on gratuities to make ends meet. The decline is mostly visible in the restaurant industry, where 35% of people say they have scaled back their tipping, the survey found. But the trend extends well beyond dining rooms, reaching grocery delivery, hotel staff, and even auto repair shops. Who's tipping at an auto repair shop? Like, are you at the Nissan dealer tipping the service advisor? Like, was I supposed to tip my smog guy? Is that why I failed? Like, do I tip AutoZone when they replace your wiper blades? Like, what are they, I don't know. Tip-reliant professions are feeling the financial impact of tipping fatigue more than anyone. You know, maybe you should tip the wiper people. PopMenu CEO Brandon Sweeney said, this is compounded by customers having less disposable income due to inflated cost of food, energy, and other necessities. Top areas where consumers say they are reducing tips in 2026 include restaurants by 35%, grocery delivery by 24%, hotel staff, including housekeeping and bellhops, 19%, taxi and ride services, 19%, auto repair, 19%, and hair salons and barbers, 18%. As many diners have noticed, restaurants and other businesses have adjusted point of sale screens to suggest higher minimum tips, $30 for a massage, often stating 18% or even 20%. 20% is appropriate. It's when you get to that 25-30 that I'm like, eek. Customers, however, are increasingly unhappy with any of those percent option or preset options. Percent, preset, same thing. Survey found that 36% of diners now opt for a custom tip rather than selecting one of the selected amounts. Custom enter, zero. When a digital screen asks for a tip, 59% of consumers say they feel compelled to leave one, down from 66% in September of 2025. I'm guilty of this. I started tipping at like every little restaurant and place that I normally wouldn't leave a tip. I mean, if it's carryout and it's a chain, shouldn't need a tip. Restaurants and other industries need to work even harder to drive more traffic through their doors and ensure workers earn what they need, Sweeney said. 39% of consumers tip at coffee shops, down from 46%. 41% tip at restaurant servers, 20% or higher, down from 45%. 27% tip at food trucks, down from 32%. I'm one of those, I stopped tipping at the food truck. 22% tip at fast food restaurants, down from 27%. 15% tip restaurant delivery drivers, 20% or higher, down from 23%. That one's interesting because if you don't tip them 20% or higher, a lot of them won't even show up. Another recent survey conducted by Toast found Californians are, on average, the lowest tippers at restaurants in the nation, leaving 17.2% compared with the national average of 19.2%. So, I don't know. I'm kind of soured on tipping, given that massage left a bad taste in my mouth. So, last week, I dove into my fight against development by starting my campaign to protect Ward Kimball's house, the San Gabriel home where he had 500 feet of railroad track that ultimately inspired Walt Disney to build a railroad in his yard and ultimately at Disneyland. And it turns out another gem locally is being attacked by developers.
Big effort is underway to protect the Big Bear Valley habitat of the world-famous bald eagles Jackie and Shadow.
Two environmental groups have begun a fundraiser to buy land to prevent the construction of a housing and recreational complex.
Not even the eagles are sacred anymore. Activists rally to raise $10 million to preserve land from luxury development near Jackie and Shadow's nest in Big Bear. And right after the chicks were born, too.
Environmental groups say the birds' habitat is at risk from developers who want to build a luxury housing community and marina in the area, less than a mile from the birds' nest. Opponents say construction would have a negative impact on bald eagles and endangered plant life. The legal battle over what's called the Moon Camp Project has actually been churning for about 25 years.
Okay. Before you get on my case, this is KTLA's audio, not mine.
To announce their plan to develop, they hadn't done any environmental studies at all. And so Friends of Big Bear Valley worked with other groups to get those done. We actually won the case in 2022. However, the developer was able to go back and redo the studies.
That convinced San Bernardino County officials to approve the project. Local activist and executive director of the Friends of Big Bear Valley, Sandy Steers, then brokered a deal with the developers who own the property for environmentalists to purchase the land. According to reports, RCK Properties signed an agreement with the San Bernardino Mountains Land Trust recently.
Great. Everything's solved. Everything's... We can relax.
Steers passed away shortly thereafter.
God damn it.
Effectively passing the torch in the fight to purchase and preserve the land. A new fundraising campaign seeks to collect $10 million by the end of July to purchase Moon Camp for conservation.
And you can go to savemooncamp.org to donate. As of the recording today on April 9th, they have $1,783,222 out of their $10 million goal. And if you want to support my $10 million goal to save Ward Kimball's house, get in my DMs and I'll tell you how to Zelle me. But it's not just Ward Kimball's house and Big Bear. There's another place that's we're going to lose in Los Angeles to developers. And this has been going on for a couple of years, I guess, but I've only become aware of it this week. And Spooky Foodie on Instagram puts it in way better words than I can.
The Sunset Strip is turning into a ghost town, but it's not the kind of ghost town that you see in your head. Not like the old Western style rickety wood. It's the modern day ghost town. Developers are coming in and just sweeping all of its history away. Behind me is a sushi spot that has been here for over 40 years. A mom and pop restaurant, one of my personal favorite restaurants here in Los Angeles. They are closing due to a hotel and luxury housing development that will sweep this entire street, including the famous Viper Room. How could a city let families like this, immigrant families that shape their culture, their economy, the awesome lifestyle that it is out here, how could they do this to people like this for something that's going to be so stupid? Now I understand prime real estate on the Sunset Strip for people to buy up these places and have expensive housing and hotels, but what's going to be left? It's not going to be what made it special in the first place. All the things that make this place special in the first place are going to be gone. It's crazy to see how fast the Sunset Strip is losing its soul in front of our eyes, and we have to do something about it. They're going to be tearing down this entire place. They're going to be demolishing the Viper Room. Now, on their website, they have a whole Viper Room section on how they're going to tear down the Viper Room and make it look better. Better sound system. Better stage. Oh, don't worry. We're going to keep an entire floor of remnants of the Viper Room to still honor its history. Shut up. This is the Viper Room. People have lived and died here. There have been many different stories that just make up the whole lore of Hollywood. And they think that they can just band-aid that history by saying, oh, we're going to keep a couple relics of this. You're going to say, oh, we're going to make it better. It's fine the way it is. That's disrespectful. If you want to put money into the Viper Room, put money inside. Make the stage a little better. Why do you have to tear this whole thing down? And again, the fact that the city lets this happen, the city clearly doesn't care about the soul. It's sad to see that all of these owners basically have to give up and leave. If you feel upset from this, you should be. History can be innovated. It doesn't have to be destroyed. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
And on a happy note. But that's good words to go by. History can be innovated. It doesn't need to be destroyed. So yeah. Go out. Support your local artists. Abandon AI. Keep in touch with me during the week at driveline.show on Instagram. Or leave me a voicemail, 833-3DL-SHOW. Coming up next week, the Barn Find King will be joining me. See you then.